mighty Bigfoot have made man's blood run cold for centuries. Some terrific and some terrifying. The Southern Appalachian Mountains whisper the mysteries of this strange and powerful creature through its smoky hills and ominous embrace. This is Brandon Thomas with Expanding Reality, elated to announce our very first Expanding Reality Excursions Befriending Bigfoot event. This is going to take place on a beautiful 27-acre ranch in Blairsville, Georgia, May 15th through the 20th. This intimate conference is going to feature Bigfoot adventure hikes in three different states, river kayaking, nightly presentations from such incredible presenters as Alexander Petikoff, Chris Matthew, Dave Zed, Preston Dennett, and many more. Also, we're going to be doing some UFO watching, some jam sessions, all kinds of hangouts. Visit expandingrealitypodcast.com/events for more information. That's expandingrealitypodcast.com/events. We'll see you there.
Welcome to Blue Collar Mystics, the under-the-hood approach to the depths of human consciousness. So many mysteries, so little time, so many big words. That's why we aim to take the mystical and make it practical, usable in your everyday life. And you know, we want to hear from you. We want to hear your story. What happened when you started asking yourself the real questions? Like, who am I? What is this? Is it a hologram? Is this some kind of weird cosmic joke? Hey, these are the questions that we are trying to get to the bottom of as we explore the final rabbit hole together here as Blue Collar Mystics. What is up? Good evening, everybody. We already got some folks kicking it on the live stream here. We're live on YouTube, Rockfin, and in the Facebook group. Welcome to Transurfing Safari. I'm Owen. I'm with Abby. What's up, Abby?
What's up? How's it going?
Going great. Going great. Yeah. We've been talking about the book Reality Transurfing and going through the chapters and chatting about those. If you're unfamiliar with the book, I've done a few videos on it, quite a few actually, and try to break down all the chapters. I'm doing a current series on it now. This episode is going to be on the topic of what Vadim calls slides. It's a fascinating topic. So if you're not familiar with reality transurfing, you still get a lot out of the episode. But I do encourage you to go and check out the book. I also wrote a little summary of the book to sort of make the ideas as concise and applicable as possible. I'm doing another video series right now. I just made a video today on slides and how to use this technique that we're talking about tonight. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Before I get started, I do have to do a little bit of promotional stuff. You saw at the beginning, Befriending Bigfoot. I'm going to be there at this thing. I'm going to be doing some comedy, but there's going to be some amazing people there presenting stuff as well. And I'm really excited to be a part of it. It's going to be in Blairsville, Georgia, is right up the road. Brandon Thomas is the guy who runs Expanding Reality Podcast. Super cool podcast. Really check it out. Chris Matthews is going to be there. He just put a documentary on Tubi. So that's coming up. in May. So check out Expanding Reality Podcast. I'll put a link in the show notes. And then I'll be at Eclipse in the at the Canyon with the Grimerica guys this spring. That's going on early part of next month, and I'm really excited about that. Anybody who's interested, check out the event. It's a lot of fun. All the events that they do are really fun. And I've got some tour dates coming up. I'm going to be in Chattanooga, Tennessee, Boone, North Carolina, Nashville, Tennessee, New Orleans, Louisiana, and the Grimerica place, as well as Panama City. I'm still booking dates too, so there will be more. Please come see me. Shoot me a message if I'm going to be anywhere near you. I will be on the 10 for a while. We'll stop and grab a coffee or something, but yeah, I'm excited about it. It's my first tour. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's exciting.
Yeah. And I'm going with my friend, Laura. We got some vibrational forks, you know, that from Eileen Day McCusick's book. She's got their hers, but we're going to be cruising with those things and, you know, ruffling up a scurry, if you will.
Tuning in with some tuning forks.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be making videos on the way too, and having some fun. We're going to go to the Fountain of Youth in Florida and the beach and New Orleans and Austin. I'm going to be in Austin for sure. So lots of really cool stuff happening in the spring. I feel like it's been a long winter, and we're all about to blossom.
So it's been a long winter there. I feel like winter was cut short quite a bit. The whole groundhog thing of it all.
It's always a long winter.
Well, it's been like spring here. It's awesome.
It just started being spring here. And I mean, yeah, this fall was, or this winter was, I don't know. To me, it seemed long. I was doing a lot of ice baths, so maybe that's why. But I used to just work on cruise ships in the Caribbean all winter. So those were very short winters. This is a little bit more.
I'd imagine.
Yeah, this is a little bit more. I don't know. And I don't, for the South, it's like, do you guys get snow though in Oklahoma? Yeah.
We do, but I feel like some years we barely do, you know.
Okay.
It was like it snowed twice here this winter.
We didn't get any snow, but it's usually about 40 degrees and raining for about 2.5 months. So, you know, it's kind of brutal. But now the flowers are blooming. It's starting to warm up for sure. Spring is definitely starting to spring up, and I'm excited. I'm really looking forward to it. This is kind of a big week astrologically too in the year. So
the new moon and the whole,
yeah,
like equinox of it all. And
yeah, 100%. So yeah, it's just, I feel like a lot of the work that we do in the winter, it starts to pay off in the spring and the summer. I don't know. At least it feels that way for me. Yeah, I'm very much more like inside and internal during this part of the year, and then start to get a little bit more active and social as the spring comes on. It's I think it's just a seasonal thing.
I get that. I lived in Oregon, so it's like rain for 11 months out of the year, so I think, yeah, people get enough. Pretty depressed there.
Yeah, you're just depressed all the time. Oh man. Yeah,
you just have to learn how to go outside and be in the rain.
No, yeah. I mean, it rains a lot here. It does rain a lot here, and it's cold. You know, it's like edging, you know, it's like, I wish it would just be a little bit colder and snow, and then we could have some fun in the snow, but it's just like 40 and raining. It's just like, ugh, brutal.
I feel like it's just practice for like the whole, I mean, I'm not doing ice baths or anything like that. So like, I try to wear a light jacket and, you know,
nice.
Tell myself the cold is my warm friend.
Yes.
You know?
I just do the cold baths. I mean, that was the good thing about the winter, was that I could just leave that. I bought a tub that you feed cattle with, just a cattle feeder tub. And it's like a 100-gallon tank. And I could just leave the water out overnight and it would get really cold, and I could just hop in there every day.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing that people don't realize. It's like, you're not bathing in it. You're sitting in it for 5 minutes.
Yeah, you know? Or less sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm really excited about this particular chapter. It's awesome. This chapter has a lot to do. If you guys are ever familiar with NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, or if you're intrigued about how mental models work or the subconscious mind and the conscious mind, we're really getting onto the cusp of the idea of the heart and mind in this book, which we really did preface quite a bit last week, I feel like. And we're kind of differentiating more and more as we go through here. But this particular chapter is really about our perspective, our perception, and how we view the world. If you think about a projector, if you're old enough to think about a projector, they may not still use those in movie theaters anymore, but
I think they do, because you still see the cigarette burn.
Okay, cool. I'm glad that they do. That's cool. Most things is different now, but like an old school slide projector, you know, and then it would spin, and you would see like a new visual. You know, that's kind of what he is pointing out, this idea of slides. And so our worldview, our paradigm, our layer of the world is basically comprised of dozens and dozens of slides. These slides are like filters. These slides are like our concepts and beliefs about the world. It's like our perspective and how we view the world. So we are sort of broadcasting into the world through these slides, through our own awareness, and broadcasting those out into the world and picking up on the evidence of them, and then basically doubling down, creating a feedback loop of our own design, more or less. I mean, can you maybe clarify that and how we can start to introduce this topic in this most straightforward of ways?
It's kind of like you're constantly visualizing what you expect, not what you want, not what you think might be plausible. Because even if it is plausible, if you don't expect it, then you're playing like a negative slide. Like you, the example that he gives in the book is, you know, there's a woman who would sit and imagine all the time, like the perfect husband and having, you know, a beautiful family, a bunch of children and the perfect house, you know, and she sat and thought about it so much, putting a lot of importance on it, but then she ends up with a man who beats her so bad that she can't have children. So she kind of ruined it for herself. Or you could say she's a victim, you know, see it how you want to see it. But the idea is that she spent all the time visualizing it, but really never accepted that it was a possibility for her. And if you can't do that, if you can't reconcile the fact that you should be sitting down at the dinner table with your family or whatever, like if you can't allow yourself to have it, then you won't have it. Doesn't matter how hard you try. I mean, if you try really hard, maybe, but it's not guaranteed. Just like just how reality works. You know that half the things that you work hard for or more, you don't achieve.
Yeah. And so within this sort of expectation that we have, right? Like the idea that dreams don't come true, like you're certainly not guaranteed to get your dream. The more you fantasize about something, right? Like there's basically three types of, intention's not the right word, because that's one of them. Desire's not the right word. All right, let's go with desire. There's three types of desire. There is fantasy or dreaming, which is like, you know, you're not going to get it anyway. So you just like create this idea in your mind. There's desire where you want it really bad, but you won't necessarily let yourself have it. And then there's intention, which is purely focused energy on accomplishing the goal. And ultimately, we want to use intention. It's the most efficient. It's the most effective thing that we could do. And our slides are going to basically make it, our slides are going to dictate what we are able to project and create in the world based on our slides, based on our prejudices and how we view the world. Because we are going to get not what we want, but what we are expecting, like you're saying, what we are projecting into the world.
Yeah. So it goes back to the whole film roll idea, and a slide is just, you know, you're sliding in on that film roll, like just a couple of frames, you know, and you do this whether you're conscious of or not. You do it usually in the negative, and it really isn't necessarily your fault. That's how you've noticed the world work. That's how you've been programmed as a child. You know, a lot of it is your conditioning. So the whole idea is that you have to break this cycle, and you can. You have to allow yourself to have it too, not just visualize. Because I lived, when I read this chapter the first time, I did daydreaming to escape reality. Like that was just kind of how I, like I worked a job I hated. So while I worked the job I hated, I would sit and just daydream, you know, think of all these different scenarios. I thought that it was just me being creative, you know, but really like it's such a waste of thought space because there was no real necessarily desire there, but there was no, also nothing to back it up. There was I never thought those things could be mine. Most people don't daydream thinking that they can have what they're fantasizing about.
Yeah, it becomes this like, it actually pushes it further away from you when you just sort of fantasize about something. Like it doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily bring it in. So there's a couple of different things about it. So what we're saying, I guess, too, is that we already have these ideas and expectations about the world. We know that we are going to see that as evidence because that's what we're focused on. That's what we believe about the world. And so we're kind of limited by the slides that we have. Now we've created these slides subconsciously. We didn't know we were creating them, but our view of the world might be this small. And it's like, but if we would widen it to something like this, we would be able to accomplish or attain so much more. But once we figure out what those slides are and begin to delve into those subconscious programs, whatever you want to call them, that filter, those filters, your layer of the world and how you view it, then you can actively actually use this very same concept to adjust your slides or your perspective or view of the world.
Into the positive.
Yeah. Exactly.
To create the reality that you desire.
Exactly. And you can bring that through with intention. So that's what really this chapter ultimately is all about. He's saying, look, you have a lot of preconceptions about the world. And what he's calling those are slides. It's like the slides are the filters that you're viewing the world through, and you can adjust those filters.
And unlike like an actual movie that you're watching though, like, so when you, because this visualization is really what this comes down to. This is how you fix your broken thinking is visualization. And if you're in this community, you probably have done lots of meditating and different visualization techniques. And sometimes it works really well and other times it doesn't. But one of the keys is to always, instead of watching it like a film strip when you're visualizing, is to imagine yourself there first person, like see yourself touching things, like manipulating objects. If you're trying to manifest a house, don't just picture the house, because you will manifest it. It will come to be, but it might not be yours, is what he said. So you'll see the perfect house, but it will never be yours. But it really comes down to like putting yourself in the position where it is yours. You're walking through the front door. You're, you know, setting your jacket down. You're going room to room where, and it doesn't take long. As long as you keep doing this like daily, then you are programming your subconscious to finally believe that it can be yours, that you can have it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can absolutely change those beliefs. And now the way that he says to do that is not just by visualizing the big long-term goal that you have, but by visualizing the process, basically the links in the transfer chain. Because his, by his rationale, it's like you might have a huge goal that's like very, very far and very distant away from you. That's in a reality that's farther away. The first thing he kind of talks about is how crazy people aren't really that crazy, right? Like they're just a schism between where they are mentally and where they are physically. Like that they're mentally, they are in another reality, but physically they're here. And there's plenty of evidence to support all this kind of stuff. It's not just conjecture, you know, because I mean, look at any schizophrenic or someone who has multiple personalities. I mean, they can, their faces even shift, you know, whenever they switch between different personalities, scars go away, all kinds of stuff. And so that's the basic premise, is that we can have a concept about the world that doesn't match the reality of the world. And for the most part, like we all do, right? Like we're not just completely unbiased in our view of the world. In fact, we're incredibly biased. So with balance being the norm, we're all out of distortion with what really is based on what our slides are. And Robert Anton Wilson calls this your belief system. I've talked about it a little bit. I love his work. He's such an awesome thinker. But like he would intentionally change his belief system and he would become a vegetarian and then walk the meat aisle and feel a deep sense of guilt and sadness for all the animals. Then he would eat meat and not feel that feeling anymore. So he was consciously playing with what he called the meta programmer, you know, this part of yourself that could adjust and tweak your perspective of the world based on your belief system and your map or model of the world. Same thing that Vadim is talking about here with slides. And he is really getting to the meat of the technique here as far as how to adjust these slides, like Abby, like you were saying, by learning and teaching yourself to slowly be able to open up and accept new possibilities. So to kind of take this theory, the further away you are, or the further away whatever it is that you desire is on another timeline, the more difficult it's going to be able to manifest that timeline. Is that kind of a fair statement? Does that make sense? Like in the whole?
Yeah. Well, okay. That's exactly what it is. It's just further away from you, whether you want to say it's a timeline or a sector of the alternative space. It's a reality that's not close to the lifeline that you're timeline that you're currently on. And that doesn't mean that it's not attainable. It totally is attainable. And then, you know, you can work hard and try for it. And, you know, you might be lucky, like what, 35% of the time, and you can do it. But this is really kind of, it's the easier answer. Just visualizing it, like, because it comes down to inner and outer intention again, because when you use your inner intention, you're just focused on how would you describe inner intention in this?
It's kind of like fighting. It's kind of like fighting against the circumstances in order to force your way to the goal, right? That's what inner intention would do. It would like push and shove and manipulate and do anything that it could to sort of try to get
being
this,
the warrior.
Get, you know. Outer intention is more about like, how can I give people what it is that they want? And because I'm giving them what they want, they're going to give me what I want. You know what I'm saying? It's like this more of a win-win type of mentality, I think.
And it still comes down to, and it always will, the coordination of heart and mind, because the outer intention is the heart. Like if, like, and desire alone isn't good enough. Because again, you can desire to raise your hand and you'll never do it. So you have to have the intention, and you in order to create a good intention, you have to believe that it's plausible for you.
Yeah.
You have to allow yourself to have it. So like, you can't like sit and pine over expensive items and stuff and then like walk into a store and then think that you'll never be able to have things like that, because you will definitely be right.
Yeah. You will block yourself because you don't feel like you are allowed to have it. You'll self-sabotage it, and you, because everything that you have feels ordinary to you. And so in order to have more, it needs to feel just as ordinary as the things that you have now, basically. Right. So you have to slowly expand your comfort zone in order to be able to conceptualize yourself having that, whatever that is. Otherwise you stay in your stuck sort of slide, whatever that is, you won't be able to adjust the slide. So let me think about this. If it's all right, let's say that you have like a reality out here. It's Cowgirl Abby or something like that. Right. So Cowgirl Abby, totally doable. Not that far off of a timeline. At all. But like, let's say, you know, you're trying to,
you live in Oklahoma.
I mean, there we go. That's definitely it. Yeah. You got the skills too. I feel like you could definitely do it, but you throw a lasso, a rope to that sector of the alternative space, which is, you know, over here a ways. Right. And so that's the ultimate goal. Now, tomorrow, you're not going to walk out and know how to break a horse tomorrow. That's just not feasible really within the material reality. It's inert, like resin, he calls it. So in order for you to get to that sector between the visualization of it and the actualization of it, there's going to be a little bit of a time delay. It's not the same as dreaming, where if you're like Cowgirl Abby, you know,
you can, and then just, I'm breaking horses,
you could just be already there, you know, like a rodeo
riding wild Mustang.
Hell yeah. So what we want to do is we want to follow that rope backwards to where you are now from where you threw it, and then backwards engineer it right to here. And that is the transfer chain. So in order for you to become Cowgirl Abby, you got to learn how to ride a horse. You got to learn how to, you know, fix a tractor. You got to, you know, whatever, like all these different skills that you're going to have to pick up in order to get to the fully actualized Cowgirl Abby avatar, right? And so from there you get back to here, and then you make those stair step smaller goals, and you visualize what he calls the process in the transfer chain. So there are going to be smaller and smaller increments basically that you're going to want to visualize and attain. And then what's cool about it is once you have attain the first one through visualization and action, of course, as well. And then the next one through visualization and action. Now, all of a sudden, you have a knowledge within you that this shit works. Now the process, you can trust. You're like, I can trust the process now. I've seen it work for me. So now you're moving toward that reality even more swiftly.
Yeah. And I hate that it sounds like a SMART goal, because it's not quite the same.
It's definitely not the same, because you want to make a very lofty end goal. But the thing about it that you want to do so that you don't upset the balance, right? Because the balance is like, if you put everything on one scale, it's like, all right, well, tomorrow I'm going to become the president. Tomorrow I'm going to do this one action and I'm going to sell all my stuff and whatever. Like if you go all in on one thing, one huge thing, which is how, for whatever reason, my mind has worked for the most part, a lot of the time. I'm like, oh, I'm going to do this one thing and it's going to be awesome. And that's everything. But that's how we sometimes tend to think that way. But instead of doing that, that sets the balance off, right? Like now all of a sudden everything's in one dish, right? And they're fucked. You know, you've totally screwed that. So what you want to do is just slowly move it into the next dish, a little bit at a time. And so it's not like making a SMART goal. You want an outlandish goal. You want the most outlandish goal. But along the way to that goal, there are smaller goals to attain. And as you attain those smaller goals, each one of those links in the transfer chain, now you are basically building confidence, or as we'll come to know later in the book, coordination with the process of transurfing, right? So it's not faith anymore. It's not belief anymore. It's evidence now. And once you see evidence, now your slide changes, right? Like now your slide shifts into the reality that it was that you wanted a little bit at a time, whatever that winds up being. So from Cowgirl Abby, like, you know, next week you're driving a tractor and you're like, holy shit, this works. You know what I mean? Like, and then the next week you're like, you're in a gallop and you're like, oh, hell yeah, dude. Like, I got this, you know? And you're like, so the more that happens, the more that your body and your subconscious mind are processing the changes in the slide. The thing that will really screw you up though is importance.
It always does.
Yeah. I don't know why it's so good.
Because that's the one thing I feel like everyone emphasizing, like, this is so important. It needs to be important to you. You need to take it seriously. And it's like, right, to an extent, but you know, I don't know. Yeah. You start so realizing that nothing is important. You're only here for a short amount of time. Like,
that's true. Yeah. And staying open-minded too could lead you to another door. Like, let's say you're like, I think I'm going to go toward Cowgirl Abbey. That's what I'm going to do. And then you start moving toward that direction. And then you meet, you know, I don't know, somebody who is like, hey, you know, we need somebody to work for our feedstock team or whatever. I don't know. Some random opportunity comes along, you know? And then you might be like, oh, actually I could do that. You know, that actually fits into what I had in mind and I can still keep pursuing this, you know, whatever. And then you wind up helping them to, you know, buy farms, to do a charity. I mean, there's a million different things that actually could materialize out of that. Or you could like get another opportunity somewhere else as a cowgirl or be, you know, part of the rodeo. Who knows? There's a lot of different options.
Well, that's just realizing the slides as they go. That just opens up more and more pathways for you to follow, you know, if you want to. Because all of a sudden, you are kind of working through your limiting beliefs. Like, you're allowing yourself to see that, like, I can do this shit. I can do whatever, you know, like, I'm making the impossible possible. And it does. It opens up more doors for you.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And sometimes those doors are things that are better than you even had in mind whenever you were conceptualizing whatever it was that you wanted, which is the best part.
Yeah. Usually it is.
Yeah. Somehow it is. And then you just feel so, I don't know.
Like blessed in the flow. I don't know.
Blessed, but kind of guilty. What is that? Like, do I really deserve this? But he says, you deserve the best. And so that's a hard thing, I think, for us to kind of get through our head. We could talk a little bit about that. Actually, there are a couple of examples in this chapter, but I'd be interested to hear how other people in the chat maybe deal with this thing too, because it's been one of my biggest blocks for sure.
Like feeling guilty for having, for
either feeling guilty for having or not feeling deserving, right? Like, you got to allow yourself to have.
I would never guess that about you. I feel like maybe I used to be that way, but maybe I've worked through some of my limiting beliefs and I'm like, why shouldn't I have it?
Right.
That's kind of more my philosophy now.
Well, better in your hands than some tyrant, right? Aren't resources better in your hands than some Yahoo tyrant?
This is the game of life, man. I should freaking win, right?
100%. Well, it's one of those subconscious beliefs. I don't really know where that came from for me, right? But it has been one of the more difficult challenges.
Yeah. I think mine was that I had to stay small. So I felt guilty for allowing myself to be bigger and allowing myself to be heard and allowing myself to have. So yeah, I think that it all kind of came down to this limiting belief of I needed to stay small. But through all of this, meeting you and doing some of my own little shadow work with friends like Ralph, it helped me to be able to work on outer intention more, because I know that why shouldn't I have it? If it's something that my heart desires, then it should be mine.
Yeah, 100%. That's a healthy entitlement. Why would you have the desire, right, if it wasn't to be fulfilled? It wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But
I feel like that's kind of our point here is like, you know, that's the point is like you are here because you are a fractal of God and you're here to realize the thing for your life or the things. I don't know. You're supposed to live it. to the fullest. I don't think you're supposed to withhold and feel like you shouldn't have things. I think that's also religious guilt a little bit.
I think that's where it comes from for me 100%, because like there's literally no reason why I should have that. None. Like zero.
Because it's like, being humble, you know, like give away the shirt off your back, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And those aren't bad qualities to have, but you're allowed to have things too. You're allowed to have experiences and have joy in your life. You don't have to always be giving it away at the expense of other people.
Yeah. And I think that's really, it's weird too, because like that whole complex, it is a complex. It's an inferiority complex. You think other people deserve it, but you don't. And it's like, wait a second. Like that's the opposite of the, you know, superiority complex, but it's exactly the same energetically, right? Like there's a different it's not balanced.
It would be the other side of a pendulum.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, that's one of my big quotes right now that I've just been saying a lot, but it's by Dr. Robert Glover. The opposite of crazy is crazy.
It right? truly is.
Yeah, because it's like whenever you try to overcorrect.
Just crazy one way or another.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You try to overcorrect and then you do some crazy ass dumb shit on the other side. You know what I'm saying? Like that's just, it's funny because we try to correct and wind up overcorrecting. And so it's about like learning, you know, how to be a little bit more balanced in that approach instead of just being like, oh, well, I'm going to completely, you know, do the opposite of what I was doing before, but it's like, that's not necessarily any better, right?
that's the
yin to the swing to the swang, you know what I'm saying? Like, so
yeah,
it's important to
it's madness.
It is madness. Yeah. It's reactive too. It's not proactive.
It is. And I hate when I'm reactive. That's so frustrating because it's, because I do try to like, be the active observer and pay attention, but when you're reactive, you're not doing any of that.
Yeah, I like
you're playing bad slides.
Exactly. And that those bad slides are projected out in the world. And we talked about this before. We have a part of our a brain that actively pays attention to things, what we tell it to basically pay attention to, called the reticular activating system. And that is picking up on the feedback loop, right? So it's like we create the thing, we see the world how we want to see it, then we see the evidence for how we already see it, and that confirms it. So what we want to do is shift how we view the world first, right? Like we have to be able to do that with these slides. So we actively want to adjust our frame, right? Like if an NLP term would be the frame, right? Like the sort of lens that you view it through. And adjust that in order to see it the way that we want to see it in order for it to appear to be that way. He says that rose-colored glasses are a conception of pessimists, not optimists.
Really? Did he? I didn't read that part. I was like, I heard the rose-colored glasses, but he didn't get into the whole amalgams of it all yet, so...
Yeah, because they're afraid. Like, they're afraid to adjust their beliefs. So... and to test the reality. So, you know, so it's really more of a pessimist's fear to have, like, to be overly optimistic. And I read a book recently called Thinking Neutral that I really, really liked. And it Takes What It Takes actually was the better of the two books. But this guy named Trevor Mawad, who trains like athletes and stuff. And I really, really liked his view on it. It seemed to go really well with the transurfing thing. Vadim's more optimistic than that, but from what Trevor's perspective was like, if you tell a, you know, Division I 5-star athlete that's trying to become, you know, an NFL star, that if they just visualize something, then they'll be the best, then they're going to see right through the bullshit. You know what I mean? So they needed real evidence and real. Also, they're dealing with teams, sports too. So there's like a lot of different components and all kinds of things like that. So it's very complicated. But basically, to stay neutral, to stay in neutral thought, and even in, like, let's say you're having a bad game, whatever, you know, three quarters through the game, and you've just had the worst game of your life, you can go into that downward spiral and say, well, this is just not my day. And then continue down it and continue down it and continue and it down worse. It. And it gets worse. Or you can stay neutral and just be like, the next pass, I'm going to throw it well, you know? And then you could wind up winning the game just off of one good play or two good plays or a quarter of the game you play well, for instance, right? Instead of succumbing to that. But they don't go out there with a super optimistic idea either, where they're like, oh, we're just going to push the other team right out of our way and it's going to be so easy. Like, it's not like that. But instead thinking very neutrally. And I like that book a lot. But I would say this. I think that there's even more power to the positive thinking than he wants to give credence to, even in that book. You know, just because, like, your emotional state and the way that you engage with people, the way that you come off, like whatever your vibe is going to be a lot better if you're in an optimistic state. And also, if you're in an optimistic state, you're going to be more likely to notice opportunity than if you're in a neutral or pessimistic state. You'll see opportunity quickly.
Well, even going back to your whole sports analogy, like I was a softball pitcher in high school, and the second, like, my teammates would get an error or do something, you know, that pissed me off, then all of a sudden I was pitching like shit. But I pitch really well if I could actually just keep my attitude good. And I mean, like laughing and having a good time. And I don't mean neutral either. It was like I had to keep myself at a higher level, and then I would pitch a great game. But I started noticing that about myself. The second I got reactive and got pissed off at my teammates, it was like, ugh, they may as well just take me out now.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, it's difficult to keep that mindfulness, but yeah, Brittany Pickle Spears is crushing it in the chat. You know, when you're neutral and acceptance surrender, that's when the good shit happens. And the more mad, you're more mad at yourself than the actual thing that you reacted to. And that's true. That's how the downward spiral,
it is true.
You know, happens. Yeah, yeah. James.
So I was like, I let you trigger me and I did something stupid. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, so he gives a lot of advice as far as shifting that importance and using these slides to basically replace and shift these into other slides. But the biggest part of it is going to be small steps and seeing evidence for the process, in my opinion, because it's like asking someone to just take it on faith. You're like, here's some snake oil, you know, rub this on the wound and it'll be fine, versus like, you know, actually getting some results with the oil, you know, a little bit, and then doing it again and then doing it again. And you start to see a little bit of improvement. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, I see that this works now. It's like you have to kind of create this smaller feedback loop of positivity or noticing the positive. That's what he's talking about with the rose-colored glasses, is that the more that you actually focus on the positive, the more that's bringing more positive things into your reality because you're shifting your awareness to it. Because
the reticular activation system is showing you.
Hell yeah, dude. That's exactly right. Yeah, he says that all slides are basically created out of importance. That's what they're created by. So like those beliefs are created because you think it's important to behave, or it's important to conform, or you need to be able to be a good boy or be a good, you know, student, you know, a lot of these pendulum strings, guilt, duty, and obligation.
Pay your mortgage. Yeah. Right.
Pay your taxes, you know, all that good stuff.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. This is a good point too that Ryan throws in there. Use the slide technique if you take pleasure in it, but if it feels like work, don't do it. Don't attribute any importance to the slide technique too. And that's exactly right. Like, some people are just not great at visualization, you know, and that's fine too. Other people might have sensations. I didn't do slides for a very long time. And the reason why is because there was nothing that I wanted to really conceptualize for myself that I didn't think the universe could just put on a platter for me without me having to ask for it. If that makes sense. It was like, I was getting better things without creating slides.
through work?
Just, they would just come, like it just opportunity. And to me, I think it's just broadcasting energetically into the mirror. So
by right, it's the, my good, world always takes care of me.
Yeah. It's just feeling good, like waking up and being super grateful and, you know, yeah, just the emotionality, I think, of it. And that's the point of the slides, in my opinion. The slides create an emotion in your body, which is a vibrational resonance, which is broadcast out into the universe and the world. It's an acoustic resonator. So now you're broadcasting a vibe. You know, it sounds so hippy dippy, but whatever, but you are.
No, but I mean, there is science to it. You know, it's measurable. It's like your thoughts and your emotions are, they literally do broadcast. You're electromagnetic. Yeah. Everyone is.
Yeah. Electromagnetic field. Yeah. I actually I made two videos today and I'm excited. I got one coming out on Thursday to speak specifically about this slide visualization technique process. And then I'll have another one too, that I did on energy, that, you know, that energy exercise that he talks about later on in the book. I wanted to like really simplify that. I've been working on it. I've been working on it in
Turning the key?
Actually, not turning the key, the most basic one, just the breath up and down. It's not even turning the key.
Oh, okay. Yep.
I'll do a turning the key one too.
The turning the key was like, that one was pivotal for me. That one like tripped me the heck out.
Yeah, that one's really good.
Good. These are all good.
Yeah.
But it's very similar to what we're doing here. Like, this is really about, you do need to start using your brain and your imagination intentionally and not allowing yourself just to daydream and just to want something, because all you're doing is creating more importance on it or whatever, or deciding you can't have it and your heart's like, nope, it'll never be yours. So I'm never going to go find that sector of the space of alternatives and highlight that for you, allow that to happen for you. Because you're not letting it do that. Mm-hmm. I like the example he said. One of the examples he said in the book was, imagine a homeless person, you know, and he's outside on Christmas Day and he's looking in somebody's window and he sees this big old feast in there. Like, he has desire. He wants to be there, but you know, he knows he doesn't feel worthy of it. So he would never be invited into the table. But let's just say he decided that he could have it. Like, if he could actually convince his heart that he could have it, he might be invited in to sit down for Christmas dinner. They might give him a shower and some clothes or something, you know?
He could have his own table. He could have his own house, his own table in his own house full of food.
Yep.
Just like, yeah. But is he allowing, is he ready to have it?
Yeah. And I think that's a process, or that is a problem with a lot of people. Like, I noticed it with alcoholism, especially, like the negative attitude, like they can't have a better life. Like, they can't fix things.
And they will convince you why they can't. They'll tell you why. No, I can't do that. You know, this had happened. It's like when I worked on the tree farm, I would be reading a book and I would tell the other guys that I was working with, I was like, dude, I read this book and this guy, he figured out how to like do this thing and make money. And you know, he figured out how to work for, I was reading like the 4-hour work week or something. And they're like, oh yeah, that's just cause he wrote a book. I'm like, well, why don't you read a book, write a book then, you know, if it's that easy, why don't you do one? You know, it's like, do you know how hard it is? First of all, to write a book, I can't tell you what the percentage of people are on the face of the planet. That probably it's a very small percentage of people that do write books. It's not an easy thing. It's not an easy endeavor. But what's harder than writing a book is selling one. So the fact that this
dude, I was gonna say marketing it. Yeah.
So the fact that these dudes thought that some dude could just sit down and willy-nilly write a book, and then now, you know, he's, you know, it's like, what are you talking about?
Rich and has the easy life. And that's the funny thing is that how many authors are published? They could even maybe be on the New York Times bestseller list. That doesn't even mean that they're rich, you know, doesn't even mean that they make a good living at it.
No, they
it's
probably
just something that they love to do.
They probably might not. I mean,
yeah.
Even exactly. Some of the authors that we know are pretty household names might not be all that well to do, you know, and it just,
yeah,
it's just funny to hear. people talk about that. But yeah, building that process, that's what I, I'm really passionate about that actually. And I think that's something that can be done so super simply. So many of the things that we want to do are quite an investment of time. And that can be the most debilitating and frustrating factor, is really honestly just being patient. And I think this is the first chapter where he talks about taking the fortress by lengthy siege. Because yeah, we just want like that insane vision to manifest overnight. But like Jessa Reed says, there's no jump cuts. You don't just get to jump to the end of the movie. You have to play through that whole process to get to that end of the movie.
So yeah, you do have to hit all the links in the chain.
You got to hit the links in the chain. There's no escaping the links in the chain. So that doesn't mean that can't happen super fast too. But like once you get, you know, it's like he talks about it in this chapter too, about riding a bike and how whenever you're riding with the, they call them stabilizers, but training wheels is what we call them. Whenever you're riding with the training wheels and then the training wheels come off and you're like, oh my God, you know, and at first you're like amazed. And then it's like, oh, this is no problem. You're like, you know, no hands, you know? And so the same thing is true with this. It's just establishing and creating that process. And I think the way to do that is just through a pretty pragmatic approach by focusing on the things that are the closest to you in that transfer chain, but also not being attached to the way that they're going to shake out, I guess you would say, right?
Yeah.
How would you say that?
And see, I do this technically with bodybuilding. Like, there is no shortcuts. I'm not going to grow enough muscle to like be a pro overnight. It just doesn't happen. But, you know, once I decided that I could have it, and it took me a while to get there. Like, I was fat. I wasn't really happy with my body. I was out of shape. I, you know, had all these reasons why I couldn't do it. But just getting back to the gym and like seeing the changes in my body through diet and exercise, I was like, huh. And I'd visualized what I wanted my body to look like. And it started getting closer to what I wanted it to look like. It wasn't quite there. But then I don't know what changed. I just decided I could be a bodybuilder. Why couldn't I do that? Like, that's not unobtainable for me. And at one point in my life, I would have totally thought it was. And then all of a sudden I was doing it. And, you know, I'm still not at pro card level, you know, but I don't think it's very far away.
And not if you just keep
doing now that it. I've done it. Yeah, exactly. I'm showing up and doing the work. I'm doing the little, playing the slides that show me growing and getting better and better. So
yeah, this, I mean, the same has been true with me. Like, I've been trying to do or learn the process of comedy. That's not something that like you just decide you're going to be a stand-up and then next year you have a Netflix special. You know, it's a little bit more difficult than that. I'm not saying that can't happen. There are phenoms out there and stuff, but you literally are shifting your being, your avatar into another. So even with going to the gym, like, right, like I've lost some weight and I'm in much better shape. Now I'm not to the point where I'm like, oh man, I want that striation on my bicep or whatever, right? Like, I'm just not there yet. I'm at the point where I'm like, hey, you know, like I feel good. I feel better. I can see, you know, the difference in my body. It's not like, but once you like get further down the road, then your goals start to change. You have more specific goals, you know, to get like chiseled or to get, you know, super lean or to get big legs. It doesn't matter. Like, what name the thing. But it's like when you first are starting out, like you're just kind of getting a feel for it and a habit for it as well.
And deciding, you know, that's the point where you're deciding, can you have what you want? Can you have even more than what you expected to get out of it?
Yeah. Well, you start to see that process happening and now you don't need faith anymore.
Yeah.
Now it's like, it's knowledge. You're like, oh shit, this process works. I can trust the process now, because when you first start out, you have to have that blind faith a little bit. And so if you make like a small goal, and then you can start to see that. But I think, and I talk about this too in the video, it's like, if you can establish a process, that's so much better than a goal, because the process will automatically lead to your goal. It's like how money is an accompanying attribute. so are goals when you create a process. Like if I write an hour a day or whatever, 5 hours a day or whatever, like I'll write a book. You know, if you want to write a book, you got to write something every day. Just write a chapter a day or write a page a day or write a paragraph a day. And then eventually you will get that. And I just want to take a second to congratulate Riggs on losing 70 pounds in 6 months by quitting drinking.
Badass.
That's amazing. Fantastic, bro. Congratulations. I love that.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's amazing. I've lost 25 pounds. So doing pretty good. And I'm excited. I think it'll get even better and better. I'll be looking better and better. I don't know if I'll be anywhere near Abby status, you know. I'm not going
to
be.
Well, I've gained 16 pounds. I'm probably about to gain 20 or 30 more. So.
Damn. And then that's all going to turn into muscle. You're going to be so jacked.
Well, I'll have quite a bit of body fat too, but you need the body fat. So I trust the process now. That's not something I could have done before, because how many people like are so obsessed with their weight? And now I'm like, I'm going to intentionally gain 20 or 30 pounds and. And I'm okay with it because I know on the other end, I'm going to be awesome.
Yeah, 100%. It's amazing.
It's trusting the process and me allowing myself to have it. Like I will have a pro card at some point, yeah. You know, when I don't know, and I'm not even worried about that. It's going to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, for me, like my goal for comedy is like, I don't have some sort of like external goal, like to be like, oh, on this stage or whatever, like, you know, famous on this TV show or have like a, what do you call it? Like a sitcom, none of those. My goal really is to be good. That's it. I just want to be able to get into a room and make people laugh really well. And then, you know, the other things, they come along as they come along. I got a headlining gig in Dahlonega coming up this month, Dahlonega, Georgia, and cute little quaint little mountain town. That's 30 minutes. I remember the first time I did 4 minutes. I remember the first time I was funny for 7 seconds on stage.
7 seconds, huh?
Yeah.
It's almost not quite a bull ride there.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't have even made it. I wouldn't have even made it.
No, you wouldn't have got the bullhorn.
But I remember that day. Like I was at this terrible open mic and I just like, it looked like a old, like retirement home diner type of place. But I just went up on stage and said, man, does anybody else think a crimson wave is just going to crash through this place? You know, and the whole place people were slapping the tables. People were just like dying, laughing from that joke, you know? And then I did one of my jokes and it went well. Right. And so then I bombed for a minute or like 3 minutes afterwards.
You got it over with quickly.
Yeah. I had a huge laugh.
You got the funny stuff out of the way.
Yeah. Real funny up at the top. And then just nothing. And then, you know, and then I had like a good set at Laughing Skull for like 4 minutes one time a couple of years ago. And I'm like, wow, well, hell yeah. You know, you extend it a little bit more and a little bit more. And then, you know, you have 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And, you know, it's not about like how much time too. Obviously you want to like consolidate it and make it better and make it more punchy and quicker and get, you know, all that stuff. It's a constant process. But by focusing on just getting better, you know, doing the thing, then the results, they come about automatically.
They do.
You know, so as long as you eat what you're supposed to eat, you go to the gym, you do the time on the things that you need to do, you can 100% relax and look at how much energy you free up by not stressing out about it. Because think about what stressing out about it would do. It would completely hamper your progress.
It
does,
because it raises your cortisol levels and then it ruins your body. So yeah.
Well, how about that?
They're not good.
Unbelievable.
Right. But also like, and that's where I think I see other people and in the bodybuilding community, and they're, you know, you can tell that they have so much riding on it. And it's like, this is a goal for me. This is something I'm going to accomplish and I want it, you know, but not in a, I just know it'll happen. So it's not a big deal. Like, I'm not like the rest who are like, oh, this time I'm going to get it. Like, this time, like, if I don't, you know, there's so many who are like that. And really, it's just a matter of just knowing.
Yeah. And when you put that much pressure on it, that just, it just doesn't help anything. You know, it's that's, you know, comedy is obviously very competitive too. So there's tons of people who are, you know, trying to get this next opportunity and they view it as this very competitive thing. I've never seen it like that. To me, it's like, hey, because if you find yourself, you know, you find your own thing, and I'm sure this is true in what you do, you know, you show certain parts of your body. If you have certain parts of your body, that's your specialty. You've been able to develop those. You got that. The same thing is true in comedy. Like, you've got, you know, the way that you do things, you tell the story a certain way.
Thank and, you.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of many parts that you are focused on, right? Like, but you can have like a specialty, basically, is kind of what I'm saying. And then that will set you apart, and you compete against yourself, right? Like, you go not necessarily to compete against somebody else, but you want to improve yourself and continue to tweak and improve the results that you're getting with your own. Yeah. Your own, yeah. Own thing. And so then the awards or whatever, it comes about by itself. But when you put all that importance into one dish, now all of a sudden you're out of balance, and it's just not gonna help you at all. It's gonna make it more and more difficult to accomplish the thing.
Did you see Ryan's question in the chat? He said, and the thing about, yep, there it is. And the thing about the slide technique, I don't know how to implement it. It does sound like a fun thing to do, but I read Neville Goddard way too much. So I always think I need to be in a drowsy state. You don't have to be drowsy for this at all. You should probably be clear of mind. But the one thing that he talks about in Tufty that he doesn't really talk about here is that if you're visualizing and you're using your forehead, because you'll feel it, you'll feel where it's coming from your body. If you're like sitting there like crinkling your forehead and like trying too hard, you're using your inner intention, not your outer intention. Like, you're trying to use your force. So you need to, like, where you would feel it in your body when you're visualizing right is like in your back, between your shoulder blades, kind of like in your neck area.
So yeah, they talk about the plate and the braid too, and
yeah,
that's a whole other thing, but I'll give you the synopsis, the real quick synopsis. Ryan, here's the thing that he tells you to do in the book. He says to draw a picture of your end goal, final slide, whatever that is. And you don't necessarily have to draw a picture. You can just create one in your mind. You could use finger paints. It doesn't matter. It's really about how you feel. But that's the thing. And so it's sort of like the cowgirl roping thing or whatever. But like, visualize the process backwards to where you are now. What are those steps between the final thing that you wrote down or drew for your end goal slide? And then visualize your next link in the transfer chain, whatever that is. So the example that I use in the video that comes out Thursday is like, you want to be a surgeon. Well, you can't skip school and just become a surgeon next week. You know, that's not how that works. You got to be able to get your undergrad, then you got to go to medical school, take your GRE, get into medical school, and ultimately do a residency, and yada, 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 right? So it's this huge, long process. But you know what the end goal is. So reverse engineer it, and then start working on the next step in that causal chain. So that would be going to school or take your whatever, going to college to get your undergrad or whatever. So just really a step-by-step visualization process. You don't want to visualize that end goal necessarily too much, he says in this book. And I think that's kind of on brand too with Frederick Dodson. So look up the Pure Technique. You can just find it on Reddit. I have a link for it in the video that I'm putting up Thursday too. But the Pure Technique is awesome. It's very, very cool. And if you're a fan of Neville Goddard, then you'll really, I think, get a lot out of it, because he talks about like visualizing yourself out of body, then you enter it. So you like create the slide externally, the view of whatever it is that you want. Then you put your emotions into it. And he says that only do it once, because once you do it, it's done. It's over with. So now you come back and then start working on the next steps. I really like this too. Have a conversation with the future you. Ask. You can. And the other part of that too, and he says it here, is if it's not clear how you should act to achieve your goal, focus on visualizing the slide, and the slide will take you in the necessary direction. And so there's some nuance here. I realize that. But think about it like this. If you have a particular goal and you, your heart and your mind agree on it, then all you have to do is wait, and the rustle of the morning stars will tell you what the next step is to do.
Ooh, yeah.
You don't need to know. It will.
That's
show
the
you.
Part that I forget all the time is like, just ask yourself, ask your heart what it is. The yes or no, pretty much. Ooh, and that ties into The Alchemist, because I'm rereading that again for like the billionth time. Such and the whole book. Like Urim and Thummim of it all, like the yes or no, really, you don't need the stones to tell you. You can hear it yourself, the rustle of the morning stars.
Right. It's there. So yeah, so just focus on that, and then it'll open up. The door will open up. You just have to ask for it, you know? And yeah, again, if it's something that's fun for you, do it. If it's not fun, if it seems like a chore, if you're not sure what you want, then skip the slide part. But you know, you can work on it with any sort of aspect of your life. You can change small things to start to feel the process, you know?
And that's the thing, is it shouldn't take you very long at all. This shouldn't take you 15, 20 minutes. It shouldn't take you an hour. Like that's because like the whole Dr. Joe Dispenza stuff, it's very similar in a way, except that he makes you spend an hour or more in meditation, and it's not practical for a lot of us. So creating your slide should only take you, I mean, it could take you seconds. If once you visualize the slide, like you can literally do it in seconds just to, you know, do that over and over, because he says you should do it every day pretty much. So, and not the inside, the process slide, right? But you know, it might take you a little bit of time up front, but I don't even think it would take you 15 minutes to visualize the next part.
I don't think so either.
Say under 5 minutes and probably closer to 2 or 3.
And I do more meditation. Even my meditations are short because, you know, I mean, shit, I got stuff to do. I'm running around doing this, that, right? And the other, but I can sit down for 10 minutes and be like, all right, yeah. Shut my phone off for 10 minutes, put the timer on. Boom, meditate for 10. And then if you can meditate several times or do one visualization exercise, one of those times in a day, just like 2 or 3 times, maybe. I don't know, whatever is good for you. It really is about you. That's the cool thing about transurfing, is like what works for you. I mean, what works for me is not necessarily going to be what works for you. We can talk about what we did and what our results are and how we experience things, but it's like the last thing you want to be is a parody, just doing something that somebody else is doing, right?
Yeah. And while it's a good map, it's not a one size fits all, you know? Yeah. That, I mean, if you're not very visual, then you might have to like write it out in words or whatever. But I think the whole idea is to kind of see it as a movie, though, you know, a movie playing out before you, but not just before you, like put yourself in the movie.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things for me was smoking cigarettes. I thought I would never be able to quit before I read Transurfing, ever. And it was like not long after I read it that I quit. And I was smoking like 2 packs a day, easy. So I don't know. No balance. James, there.
Yeah. James in the chat said choices. And that's what this all boils down to, is that slides are, you do have a choice. You just have to convince your brain that it is a choice and that you can choose that thing, whether you think that you can have it or not. You just have to learn how to convince your subconscious or your heart that you can have it. So it is a matter of choice. If you are choosing that you can't have it, or if you're determined that you can't have it, even though you want it, that is a choice.
Well, you convinced yourself in your subconscious mind of that already. That's that slide that you created, right? So you already created one that said you couldn't. Now you can create one that says you could by eroding the old one. And like I said, I say start small, you know, start with something simple and easy so that you can get a feel for it. And it doesn't feel like a big deal. Like on an energetic level, it doesn't fucking matter. Like Frederick Dodson says, like it could be $100 or $1 million. Energetically, there's no difference. It's a car or a parking spot or a cat or a house or whatever. It doesn't matter. We're the ones that assign the value to it, right? Like we're the ones with the creating distortion. Everything is just as it is, you know, but with our conception and the way that we view things, take a small thing and mess with that and start to
get. So would you call that a slide when you go like when you're like, I'm going to pull up to the grocery store and I'm gonna get like a front row park, like, and then you visualize it and then you're there and it happens. Like, is that, that would be a slide, right? Even though the end goal is very short term.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's good to practice on small things because small things show you that it works. And then once you see that it works, then you start believing that it works on bigger things.
And I would even say to that point, it's even nuanced, like, cause you might get discouraged, like, oh, I'm going to get a parking spot right up at the front this time. Right. And so then you drive to the grocery store and then somebody pulls right into the spot that was waiting there. You thought that was yours or whatever. When you get to the point where you're vibrating on an energy level overall, where things just happen for you and you're actually working with outer intention, you don't even have to worry about that stuff. Like the spot just opens up and you just pull right into it. You know, it, what does he say? It just happens that, like, you know, like it's not an effort type of thing that you're putting forward there. It's just this fluid motion that's happening with yourself in the world, right? Like things just open up because, like, if you look at it as this all or nothing thing, you're putting way too much importance on it. The balance scales are off. So it's very unlikely that you will have it. Whereas if you're in like sort of a state of just like elation, happiness, you're always grateful for whatever happens, then better things actually come your way as a result of being in that place. It's
Yeah, it's the attitude, and not this chapter, but it's like, if things work out, great. If they don't, even better, because there's a, you know, maybe you didn't get your 10,000 steps in your tracking today, so it's better that you didn't get the front row park.
Yeah, exactly. There's always a reason why, you know. We can jump ahead to Tufte because, you know, she says that everything is actually actively working for your benefit. If you can just relax and trust that process, imagine being able to do that. Now you're moving mountains at that point.
Yeah. It's the faith of a mustard seed.
100%. It really is. It's not about this one little thing and you being able to, you know, get this. I'm going to get this parking spot. Like, no. That's not what this is about. But yeah, I get good parking spots all the time, and I have to park downtown all the time, and I'll just pull right up to the bar all the time. But it's not because I'm like, I'm going to get this parking spot right now, or let's magically manifest our parking spot, guys. Come on, let's hold hands. It's like that. It doesn't have to be gay, you know? It can just happen.
But if it's gay, it's gay. It's okay.
It's nothing wrong with that, you know? Like, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't mind putting some, you know, doing some skipping and frolicking and hand holding and whatever it is. It's up to you. You design it. Exactly. You design it. You create it. It's up to you anyway. Yeah. Cool. Anything else that we didn't cover? I think we're pretty solid.
If not, I'm sure you probably covered it in your video that's coming out.
Video's gonna be good
on slides. I'm excited. For more information, watch Owen's video on slides.
Yeah, I'll try and make a. Yeah, I mean, I just say a lot of what I said, but on the whiteboard and just like draw a thing and blah blah blah, whatever. Hopefully,
visuals are great. The whole point of it, the visualization of it all.
Yeah, I think they help. I mean, I've talked to some people, like I have some clients who are like, I can't visualize. I'm like, that's not a problem. I hope you realize that is not an issue at all. You don't have to do that. It's really about sensation. That's what matters.
Yeah. It's the feeling of you having it.
Yeah, exactly.
The feeling of mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished, dude. Nailing it. As a constant thing all the way through life. But yeah, thank you guys so very much. I'll say once again, come out to Eclipse at the Canyon in Utopia, Texas, over the eclipse. There's all kinds of crazy conjecture about the eclipse and all these warnings and stuff going on, like about travel and stuff. If it's a zombie apocalypse, the best place to be is with the Grime Erica guys at this thing. You know, let's shoot some zombies, let's have some fun, we'll have a good time. And then Expanding Reality Bigfoot excursion, that's in May, that's in Blairsville, Georgia. It's gonna be a lot of fun. And then I have some dates coming up very soon. Again, Chattanooga, Nashville, Boone, North Carolina, Dahlonega, Georgia, Panama City Beach, Utopia, Texas, New Orleans, Louisiana. I'll be in Austin and very likely Houston. I'm still waiting on some dates there. If I'm coming anywhere near you, I really want you to reach out. Shoot me a message. We'll grab a coffee or whatever.
How about Oklahoma?
Oklahoma, eventually. I've had a couple of people hit me up about Oklahoma. I think we're going to, yeah. And I had somebody was like, come out to Portland. Somebody's like, come to Adelaide. My homie Adam Sellers, you know Adam. He's like, come to Adelaide, Australia. I'm like,
oh, well, that'd be awesome.
Let's fucking go, dude. I'm game. Let's make it happen. We'll make it happen. It's a lot of fun. It's been a fun process and really cool to learn. And yeah, crazy doors have opened. Crazy things have happened. I'll talk more and more about that in time. And just, yeah, thanks for tuning in and hanging out with us. We had a great turnout. Thanks, everybody in the chat. Really appreciate you all for being here, hanging out with us live. And yeah, if you're watching the replay, thanks to you as well. Shoot us a message. Go to the Telegram. Do some readings in there. Facebook, do some readings in there. Share some stuff in there. So feel free to share. And yeah, join the conversation. Thank you so much for being a part of the stream today. And yeah, we'll see you guys next week with, I believe it's the Heart and Mind, is it not? Yeah,
I think it is Heart and Mind.
Yeah, which will be a really good episode. It's a long chapter, and
I got a good meme for this one. I created it. It was really good.
Oh, you made one? That's cool. I swiped one that I thought was pretty good for this
one. Oh, I multi-layered it and everything. Like, I learned meme magic with this one. So
very cool. Well, be on the lookout for that, everybody. Follow Abby on Instagram at abstract1. I've got her channel also linked in the notes of this show, as well as it's the number one featured channel on my channel. So go over there, subscribe to Abby. She's building her channel up. We really appreciate you guys hanging out. We'll see you next time. Peace.
Good night.